Sun, and today I'm joined by Marima and our special guest, Brittany. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Hi.
Returning guest host, Brittany.
Woo-hoo, that's
yes,
right.
Hello.
Oh, that's right. Your very first one was one when I wasn't here. You guys did Divergent Talk, right?
I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Brittany came on and was my friend when everyone abandoned me, so.
Aww.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't abandon you, I just was not in town.
Yeah. Tell yourself that, Jen.
I get to do that every now and then, okay, Marima?
I'm still scarred.
Abandoned me.
Clearly traumatized.
All right. So, to get things started, let's talk about what we've been reading, because I don't know about you guys, but I've got some good stuff that I've been reading. Marima, do you want to start?
Sure. I have actually been pretty busy, so I haven't had time to read heaps of things, but I read the last book in the Mortal Instruments series, City of Heavenly Fire by Cassandra Clare. I thought I wrote a really nice review of it, but then everyone said I was mean, so I don't know what to do. But, you know, if you like the series, you'll like the book, and if you don't like the series, I don't know what you're doing reading the sixth book in the series, so, like, don't do that. But I will say that it definitely relied a lot on your knowledge of her other series, the one that came before, the Clockwork one, which I had not finished. So I definitely had to, like, Wikipedia.
Devices.
Yeah, the Infernal Devices. I had to Wikipedia some of the characters because I was like, I do not know who these people are. And it also spent a little bit too much time setting up her next series, which is The Dark Artifices. And I just didn't care about that, which is a shame because it's already like a almost 600-page book. So, you know, you're like, man, you could cut this down a little bit. But it was fine. It was fun. And then I'm also reading The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt, which is being marketed as literary fiction. But, you know, the guy that narrates it is young adult for majority of it. So, yeah, if you're into that. I don't really want to describe the plot because it'll give it away, but it won the Pulitzer Prize this year, so yeah, it's a pretty good book, and it's beautifully written. It's set in New York. It's really visual. It's she's got a great turn of phrase, and I would definitely recommend, but it is quite big, so it's a bit of a commitment, but that's all I've really been reading at the moment.
Very nice. Brittany, have you read anything interesting lately?
I'm trying desperately to finish Behind the Beautiful Forevers by Catherine Boo for Monday because I, of course, am a huge John Green fan, and that is what the Nerdfighter Book Club is reading. And it is about this little, like, slum village outside of the Mumbai airport and how people are, like, rising tensions because this one family who is, like, a group of, like, maybe 13 Muslim families who live in the little community have figured out a way to make money, and that just means that they have like a brick wall separating the other hut next to them, and they figured out a way to like gather like recycling and sell it to these big recycling plants because they're really good at sorting. And it's about like all of these people who are trying to like rise above their caste and what that means for this little slum village in India, and the tensions are like, it's really moving. I didn't think that I would like it, but it won like the National Book Award and stuff. So good for Catherine Boo. Yeah. And then, well, I went to BEA, so I'm reading a few advanced readers, but I just finished Landline by Rainbow Rowell, which comes out in July. And it's an adult book. And I can't say that I'm like a huge, huge fan of it. I don't know why. I wish I liked it more than I do. But I would definitely recommend it. It's a quick read,
that's
in my
sad
opinion. So, yeah, I mean, it's great. Like, it's very quick for me. It was like, I wanted it to be a young adult book, but it wasn't.
Did you read Attachments?
Yes, I did. And I liked it a lot more.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, but Landline was good. It's a little, it has, like, a little bit of fantasy kind of thrown in because she's, like, calling. She's, like, kind of staying at her parents' house, but she's talking on this old phone that's in her old room and having these conversations that happened in the past. So it's, like, you got to, like, wrap your head around that. I was actually more interested in what she does in her day-to-day life than her marital problems, which are, the premise of the book. But, you know, that's all right. And then I finished Wolf in White Van by John Darnielle in about 7 hours. Finally, I binged it.
Was it
and
good?
It was fantastic. It was so fantastic. The
Yay.
Prose is just so good. I thought it was very, very well done. And I went to a reading with him and Rainbow Rowell at like the kickoff of BEA. And even just listening to him read like one page, I wanted it so badly. And it's very good.
Yay.
So that comes out in, I think, October. So put it on your pre-order lists.
Yes. Merrima desperately wanted that book. And
yes, I'm waiting for it.
Get it for her.
Yes, I'm getting it to her.
Yeah. Brittany's actually going to send it to you because I was like, she's like, oh, I got this. I'm like, oh, Merrima really wanted
give
that.
It
and I
to
couldn't
me.
Get a hold of it. And she's like, oh, I'll send it to her. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And after I finished reading it, I realized it's signed. So bonus for you.
What? Hello.
Yeah, I have a couple things that are signed for you too that I'm going to put in the box.
What?
Yeah,
guys.
We take good care of you, you know. That's how we do. All right. So for me, I just finished The Murder Complex by Lindsay Cummings. It's her debut. And it's a really cool concept. It does feel a little bit like The Hunger Games / Divergent and kind of like this mix of the two. But it's interesting. And for a young adult novel, it's kind of gritty and bloody and not what you would normally expect in those regards. It's much more graphic than Divergent and Hunger Games. But I liked it. It's interesting. The characters are interesting. And the female character who's the lead is particularly interesting because usually when you get into these kinds of situations, it's the girl who has all the emotions and the feels and everything else. This girl was basically trained to be a killer, and she doesn't think twice about doing it. Her father's motto was kill or be killed, and that's what she lives by. Whereas you have the boy who's much more sensitive to kill, and to murder and to death. And the idea is that the murder rate way outweighs the death rate. And the boy, Zephyr, he's a ward, like an orphan of the state. So his job is to go around and pick up the dead bodies. And so the idea is every morning, these group of people go around and pick up all the dead bodies that are on the ground because they basically litter the ground. And nobody knows who's killing them, and nobody really knows why. So it's this really creepy, kind of twisted read. So it was really interesting. I mean, it had its moments that weren't so great. I mean, it is a debut those tend to happen sometimes. But overall, I think it was a really interesting read. And I think the people who read Divergent and Hunger Games and all that stuff would totally be into this book. So that comes out on Tuesday. So that'll be something to look forward to. And then I have my bags of BEA stuff. As soon as I finish my schoolwork, like tonight, as soon as we're done this, I'm going to hand in my last stuff for my one class. And then I have other stuff for my other class, but that can be put off for a bit. I'm like diving into my books because I've been so good. I haven't really touched them because I've been super busy with like finishing up my classwork. So I'm so excited to
Me
be done and
too.
To like... I know!
I have this
All the
huge pile of
do.
Things to read. I just have to
I
wait
know.
Till next week.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm slacking.
Yeah.
But it's been a little busy. So I'm super excited about that. And then, like, my school graduates next, like, my students graduate next week. So then I'll have, like, class will be a little bit tamer, too. Even though, like, I teach summer school, it's way easier than teaching regular school. It's not quite as intense. So there'll be lots of time. I'm so, so excited about that. Yippee. All right. So let's talk about our book bites this week. This is a comment from Laura. And it says, how did you all get involved in Hypeable? And or do you guys write or have books out yet or hopes for books coming out? So do you guys want to talk a little bit about how you got into Hypeable? Brittany, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the newest, I think. Maybe out of all of the people on the site. And I started in September. And so there was a post on Hypeable. I was a regular visitor of Hypeable. And one of the posts, I think I saw it on Twitter, was a call for writers. And so I emailed Sonia, and she put me in touch with Andrew. And I went through, I sent in my resume and writing samples and all of that jazz. And I took a breaking news test, I guess, and got my article written. And then I sort of was given my pick of shows that were available, ones that I really like and watch, like Once Upon a Time and Girls and HBO's new show that premiered last year or this January, Looking. And I was able to jump on American Horror Story, and it just sort of like snowballed with all the things that I got involved in. Now I'm doing the Rewatchable podcast, and that's how I got involved mainly, was fan first and then reply to an ad later. So that's how I got started.
Very cool. How about you, Marima?
I started, it was 2 years ago in May, so that seems like a long time. I started as a features writer, or what they used to be called, like, viral writers. Just, yeah, replying to an ad. I kind of through a friend I knew about Hyperball, and then I just happened to see the ad, so I applied for that. Then I did the Sorkin series podcast for a little while, and then I started doing more of the book news. I was a news writer for a bit, writing about the newsroom and books. And then I've moved back more into features now, and I'm like coordinating the features team and doing Book Hype and doing Hype, which is like our general entertainment podcast. And I did the Veronica Mars Rewatchable, which was fun. And yeah, that's, I've kind of come full circle. I've ended up where I started.
Very fun, very fun. For me, this summer will actually be 3 years, which is so weird to even think about. And I knew Andrew because we had worked on Twilight stuff together when he had what was his Twilight stuff called? I forget. He had a Twilight podcast. And so that's how we knew each other. And we were at Comic-Con, actually, oddly enough. And he was looking for someone to write about books because they didn't have anybody who wrote about books. So that's how I kind of came on. I said, well, I know a couple of things about books. I'd be happy to write about them. So that's basically it. And from there on, I was the book person. So, and now I have
the
lots
book
of
queen.
Book people with me. Yeah. Shiny crown and all.
Yeah.
Oh, so then it's definitely fitting that I met you in real life at BEA.
Yeah, it was perfect, right? yeah, Brittany and I just got to meet last week. It was pretty awesome.
Oh, I'm jealous.
So, yeah. So, well, we've met. We've hung out.
Yeah, but I haven't met Brittany, and she's cool.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I forget how, like, we all, like, meet in random places.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's pretty much how it turned out. And now, so I basically run the book section and have a lovely group of people that work with me, because the book section, you know, is, it's like saying, you know, I cover the TV section. If one person covered all of the TV shows, that would never work.
Right.
So that's why there's like a small army of us that cover books, because there's a lot of them and I couldn't read all of them considering I have a full-time job and I go to school full-time, just, you know. So yay. I'm grateful for all my bookish friends that like to come and talk books with me. And oh, and I do the Once Upon a Time podcast as well. As a random yay. Aside.
I feel like we're just like,
join me.
I feel like we're just pimping eventually. Ourselves out right now.
We totally are.
Yes, if you want Once Upon a Time news, come to me. If you want Once Upon a Time podcasting, go to Jen. If you want big, big features, see Marima.
Oh, like, look at that.
We got it covered, kids. We got it covered.
She's like our publicist. We should hire her.
I know. so but it's so weird to think about, like, 3 years ago this summer will be when I joined Hyperball. It was like only, I think Hyperball was maybe a year old at the time that I joined. I think they had just turned a year, maybe.
Yeah, it's weird. I like had a bit of an anxiety attack when it was my 2 years, being like, how did my life, what had happened? How did 2 years just go past?
Like, how have I been doing this for that long? It doesn't feel like it at all, but you're like, oh, wow.
Gosh, I freaked out when Once Upon a Time ended. I was like, oh my gosh, I survived an entire 22-episode season.
Yeah, and that's a brutal one sometimes.
Yeah.
That stuff comes fast and furious.
Yeah, and like some weeks it's like 8 articles a week, and then other weeks it's like, we'll just give you the photos.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta love it, right?
So all what right, was well, the this second half of that? Was there another part of that?
Oh, if bites? Any of us write books. So I don't know, do you guys write?
No, and I always feel like I'm the only one on this podcast because, like, Karen and Kyle and Michal are all definitely, like, prospective writers. And they're always talking about, like, when I write my book, blah, blah, blah. And I, like, have zero interest in writing fiction. I just read it. I literally, like, could not think of anything worse to do than, like, sit down and write fiction. I don't know. So definitely not for me. For them, yes. Jen, you're not...
No, sometimes I like write things down because they get stuck in my head, and that's the only way I can make them go away. But I've never set any intentions on writing anything.
Yeah, same here.
I don't
I
think
have
I
a
have it in me
giant,
to finish
like a giant book of just like one line
ideas.
ideas, and then I'm like, nope, never gonna revisit that again. I look through it and I'm
Exactly.
like, what was I thinking?
That's really funny. No, like sometimes, yeah, I don't ever have designs to be like, I'm going to be a writer. Like, I just don't have it in me at the moment. Primarily because I'm so busy. Like, and then sometimes I'll start things and then I never finish them. So I'm like, clearly it wasn't a good idea if I can't stick through it. Who's going to stick through reading it? It doesn't make any sense.
True.
So, you know what
I'm
I
just gonna
mean?
stick to
So,
reading. That's what I'm good
yeah.
at. I'm not
So
good at
that's
writing fiction.
pretty much what I do. I stick with the reading portion because it's way easier.
But one day you might be able to go and buy a book from Karen or Kyle or Michal.
Right.
Michal's will be about dragons, probably.
Absolutely. In fact, I think she is writing one as we speak about
Kyle's
dragons.
will be about murder
Wizards.
and death and,
Murderous wizards.
yeah. And boys with no clothes on.
Pretty much. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up right
Then
there.
Mickey, like in the background.
Yeah. Just like running around.
It'll all take place at Disneyland.
Karen is like, I don't know. Karen's a bit of a,
Maybe like
more of a dark horse.
Teen Wolves. I
Yeah, I was gonna
don't
say, I would definitely
know.
say like some kind of supernatural type thing.
Be, yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see. So you keep those guys. We'll keep you posted if anything major happens for
Yeah, we
anyone.
won't ask them. We'll just make it up.
We'll just let you know. It's fine. All right. So our discussion tonight is supposed to be about The Fault in Our Stars. Woohoo. So it came out this weekend, and I am looking at a report from The Hollywood Reporter saying that it is headed for a $52 million plus debut. That is obscene, you guys. Obscene. Like, I don't even know.
I
It
can't
opened
even
with
wrap my head.
26 million on Friday.
It's insane.
I couldn't get a seat in the theater on Thursday night. Like, I
Yeah.
had to like sit in some rando row in the middle. It's like, excuse me. I'm like, can you just move down? I'll take the aisle seat. They're like, no.
Oh no.
Oh my God. Those
Yeah,
crazy.
that it's insane. It beat out Tom Cruise's sci-fi Edge of Tomorrow like solidly by a good 20 some odd million dollars.
So it's definitely gonna like top the weekend.
Yeah, it's gonna take the weekend,
Yeah,
absolutely.
that's insane.
It's insane because it's a female-driven,
Young
like
adult,
young adult
non-supernatural that
contemporary.
was made for $12 million.
Exactly. Opening in June.
Yeah.
The absurdity of that right there is just crazy. We're not talking a superhero film. We're not even talking an action film.
Yeah.
So, or a Nicholas Sparks adaptation.
oh, hey now.
Exactly. Rachel
But hey,
McAdams
you
is
know
not in this
what's.
movie, so.
Nor is Ryan Gosling. It's very
Right.
unfortunate. But,
To its detriment, I would say.
yes, always. But what's really funny is Temple Hill Productions, who is basically Wick Godfrey and Marty Bowen, they are the ones who produce all of Nicholas Sparks's films. So, I wouldn't be surprised if they knew a thing or two about how to make a movie look like a Nicholas Sparks movie. I'm just saying. Especially a cancer movie. Anyway, so that's my one comment on that.
Wow, that is a good point. Yes,
Yeah,
thank
I
you.
did
I
not
know that.
Yes, you got to be up on these things. And Wick Godfrey is also the man behind the Twilight films.
Yes, that I did
He
know.
is behind Maze Runner. He, what else? He's behind something else coming up soon. That's a YA. Not If I Stay. He was in on the option for Paper Towns to produce. So he's all over this. He know like he's so good at knowing. So it'll be interesting to see if the Maze Runner is successful this fall. And I have a feeling it will be. It has the potential to be very successful. So
Yeah.
we'll see if Wick Godfrey still has the golden touch by the time September rolls around.
I would say all signs point to yes.
Yeah, he's got Dylan O'Brien in that puppy.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And now they can go to Comic-Con this summer because they bumped it from February to September. Like, they can roll it out the way it needs to be. So it should be pretty interesting to see how that one plays out. But enough about that. We'll talk about that eventually. Let's talk about The Fault in Our Stars. So let's go with initial thoughts. And Brittany, you are our guest and a nerd fighter, as you self-proclaimed. So why don't you give us, as a devout John Green fan, your opinion of this adaptation?
All right, well, when I first saw it, I was caught off guard because I was at a Tumblr meetup thing where we were able to go see the movie like 2 weeks before it came out, right after the press conference aired. And I literally just got done telling the girl next to me that I would need like a week to prepare myself, and I wouldn't be able to like go in not knowing what I was in for. I'd have to go to like a 9 a.m. showing where like no one was around me. And then John Green comes in the room and is like, oh, by the way, you're going to go see the movie right now. So first of all, John Green was there. Second of all, I was going downstairs to see the movie. And I held it together pretty well until the end. Maybe I made it through Amsterdam okay. And then it didn't go so well from the eulogy on when I first saw it. But the second time I saw it on Thursday, I cried during all of like the happy parts. Like anytime like Ansel smiled, I was crying. I don't understand what happened. It was a hot mess. But I
so adorable. Like he smiled and I cried.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It was just like, I guess maybe visually I knew it was coming as opposed to like textually. And overall, though, I will say I thought it was an excellent adaptation. I didn't have any gripes about it. I didn't have any qualms about what they left out versus what they kept in. The minor change. There was one change that I didn't necessarily like, but I understand why they did it. I feel like I'm making a lot of allowances for it because I had such a positive initial reaction to it. And after seeing it again, I was, like, more okay with what they left out. But, yeah, overall, I thought it was an excellent adaptation.
Awesome. All right, Narima, you saw it first. You saw it before any of us, I think.
Oh, yeah, I probably should re-see it because I saw it, like, I guess it's three or four weeks ago.
All right, so recall as best you can.
Well, what I have to say is as people who listen to this podcast know, like, I'm not the biggest fan of The Fault in Our Stars anyway, but I did see it with a lot of big fans and they loved it. And I was sitting in the cinema literally surrounded by the sounds of people sobbing their eyes out. I did not cry because I have no soul. So, yeah, I don't know. There wasn't any really big like moments where I was close to crying. I have to say, maybe the moment that was like closest to drawing any emotion from my like sad old body is when they come back from Amsterdam and the dad is there with the sign, because I always thought that was really sweet. But apart from that, I think it was a really good adaptation, and I think it was an average movie, which is not a popular opinion, I know. But, you know, I think it's one of those things, like, if you love the book, you're going to really love the film. And if you had problems with the book, they're going to be even worse in the movie. And that seems like a pretty common experience of people who were maybe not the biggest fans of the book. So I would definitely put myself in that camp. But I think fans are going to love it. And obviously it's doing very well, so they've done something right.
Very true, very true. So for me, I actually liked the movie. I thought it was a pretty solid adaptation. I think it's going to give fans absolutely everything they want. There were moments, like Marima said, that I was like, really? Really, that line came out? Like, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Like, what comes to mind immediately when I say this is when, like, Hazel's sitting on her bed and she just, like, reads the email from, I forget his name. The author.
Van Houten.
And thank you, yeah, Van Houten. I'm like Willem Dafoe, but that's not his name. So when she's like, what is this life? And that whole, like, I'm just like, really? Like, I don't know, maybe I'm too old, but I was just like, it seems a little much. Like so little things like that kind of annoyed me a little bit. But other than that, I thought it was, you know, it was a good movie. It was, you're entertained when you watch it. And that's what I think you go to the movies for. I did cry, but I want to throw in a disclaimer. I was in a theater that was filled to the brim with teenage girls. I went and saw it like 2 to 3 weeks ago at a very early screening. And I brought my younger sister with me because she's like in love with this book. And so we go and we're sitting there and watching it. And we get to the eulogy and I'm like, oh my God. And I was like, It was okay. You know how they just like tears kind of like a little bit squeak out of your eyes. You're like, yeah, this is fine. This is no big deal. But by the time they're like at the car situation where he's like desperately ill, everyone in the audience was like ugly crying. Like everybody in the theater. And you're like, okay, I'm not gonna cry. But when everyone around you was like heaving, I mean, like heaving sobs, you're kind of like, there's no escaping it. It's like when someone yawns, you have to yawn too. It's kind of like that. And so, like, I had like tears streaming down my face. I'm like, this is not okay. This is not what I go to the movies for. But yeah, there was that. So it was a really good adaptation. And I think it hits the mark for fans. And I think, you know, looking at it in comparison to movies like it, I think it's equal to those films. You know, anything, as we talked about earlier, like Nicholas Sparks films, or if anyone ever saw The Vow with Channing Tatum and Rachel McAdams, any of those things, that's the kind of film this is. Even though it is an adaptation, it falls into that category and it works. It you know, it's the equivalent, if not better, than some of those films. So I think it'll hit its mark, and obviously it has with a $52 million weekend. So that's where I am with that.
So many
But yeah.
feels.
So many, like, it's just so funny. Like, I was not prepared for the way people would like be sobbing in the theater. Like, I knew there would be tears, I knew people would be crying, but when I say people were like, oh, like in the theater, like, what is going on right now? And it wasn't just like one poor girl, it was like everybody.
That's exactly how Thursday night was. When I first saw it, there were only like 20 people there, and everyone was like crying, but they were like politely crying,
You do have
if you
like
can
some
politely
like
cry.
control.
These girls were every like line that they must have like written on their walls that was said in the movie out loud, they would like gasp, and then like the sobbing. Like at one point, I was like, I can't hear the movie because this one girl was like having a panic attack.
Oh
And
my
then the
God.
best part was that I was sitting behind like two dads who did not want to be there, but clearly like their 13-year-old did, and they just were like the head in their hands, like watching this like other little like group of friends like hug each other every scene. And it was Thursday night was almost too intense for me. Like I was put off by the
We're just
crowd.
sitting there being
No,
like, can't you just ugly cry in your house like everyone else does? Just keep it
yeah, I was like, wait
together.
till you get to your car. Like I've cried, but like I was like, you know, dabbing my eyes under my glasses. The only time I've ever like really like cried in a public forum at a movie was Les Mis on Christmas Day. I
Oh,
was a hot.
totally
There was no
understandable.
consoling me. There's like no consoling me.
Well, the funny thing is, in the screening that I saw, there were a whole lot of Penguin people there because it was run through the publisher, which is funny because like those people should know better. Like they publish the book, they know what's up in
They
it,
know that book intimately,
and yet
okay?
they were all like surprised, were crying and like gasping, which I found very funny. So I think there's no defense against the feels for the Fault in Our
Maybe.
Stars unless
I think
you
one
have
thing
a
was,
no
unless you have
soul.
no soul like
Yeah.
Manuel. I think part of it is once it's visual and the words come off the page and become real people, and you have that association of what's really happening, and you associate it with a person, then it becomes very different. Like you view it as a person, you view everything very differently when it's not just a word on a page.
Right.
So I think that that has something to do with it. And that's my psychological babble for the evening. Is everyone good? All right.
Well, no, that's perfect because I think that the parts, the first time I saw it, that got to me the most were seeing her parents. Because in the book, I
God,
think
her
I sort of,
parents are
I like
amazing.
focused on, like, I almost call it Shailene and Ansel, but no, Hazel and Gus. I like focused on them so much that, like, yeah, the parents were there in the book and they had their moments with Hazel and they were touching, but seeing them on screen, like you said, Marima, with the sign, at like seeing those moments, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is like a little rougher than I was anticipating.
Yeah. So can we talk about the casting a bit? Because for me,
Yeah,
that was
let's do it.
definitely like the biggest strength of the film. I thought every single casting was like so spot on. There's not a single person that I was like, eh, like I could do without them. I thought they were all so perfect.
No, I absolutely agree. I think it was okay. Ansel Elgort as Gus was, you couldn't find a better Gus, I don't think. Like, I don't think there's anyone who could have done what he did in that film.
And
He's just perfect.
I was not pleased when he was cast.
Which is so funny. Why weren't you pleased? What was it about him that you didn't like?
I think, well, I was against anyone being cast in this movie.
You're like, yeah, I didn't like, want it.
Like, stop happening.
And, like, I did. I went back in like my Twitter, like I went to like the Twitter archive and I looked up anything I had tweeted about The Fault in Our Stars, and I was so angry about casting.
You were one of those.
I had like three tweets that were like, stop casting this movie. This movie cannot be made. Like, I was very against this movie being made when it was first like talked about. But I think Ansel, the problem with him being cast was that he was too pretty. I don't know. I liked him a lot in the movie. Don't get me wrong. I thought he was perfect after I saw it. I couldn't think of a single human being who could take that role. But I guess because the movie's told from Hazel's perspective, you have to cast, like, the most charming person in that role. Because that's how, like, she remembers him, is as this, like, Prince Charming.
Yeah, but...
And he's pretty Prince Charming.
I think he's like that in the book anyway. And, like, okay, we're not going to get into a big discussion about the book. But for me, Ansel actually improved on Gus. I found him a lot more tolerable in the film than I did in the book. Although that, it's a metaphor scene, just, like, makes me cringe so much still. Ugh. I can't
deal with
that.
And I think the last time I was on Book Hype, we talked about the metaphor scene. The trailer had just come out, and I thought it was, like, the worst possible moment that they could choose.
Right, and I definitely agree with that now that we've seen the whole film. There were so many other things that would have been much better. But, yeah, I think, well, definitely for me, maybe because I'm not as attached to, like, Hazel and Gus, the standouts were... Laura Dern and Sam Trammell as Hazel's parents, who I thought just killed it.
They
were so great.
Like, the hospital scene where she's telling the little girl that she can just go, it's okay to go.
Mm-hmm.
That almost, out of everything, I think that almost broke me more than anything else, because that it's just watching her saying she's not going to be a mom anymore. Like, it's gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
She's so fantastic in that.
Yeah.
Or when she tells her that she can't, like, they can't afford to go to Amsterdam. I was like, oh my gosh, please just go get the bad news over with.
Because
she was so perfect, like trying to be happy for her in that moment, yet telling her that she couldn't go to Amsterdam because they couldn't afford it. Oh, it was so bad.
Yeah, and like when she's telling her about she's doing these classes and she didn't want her to feel bad and everything. It was, yeah, they were so sweet. And also for me, Nat Wolff as Isaac was one of my favorites because I'm just a big Nat Wolff fan. I think he's good in everything.
Yes.
But he was so much funnier. Like, Isaac was so much funnier than I remembered him being in the book. Like, when I read that book, I don't think I laughed out loud one time. But when I'm watching the movie, I laughed in, like, every single one of his scenes.
The trophy scene was unbelievable.
Yeah. that was probably my favorite scene.
Yeah. So what did you guys think of Shailene as Hazel?
She was very Hazel.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, she was good.
You didn't like her?
Okay. Go ahead.
Sounded very non-committal, Brittany.
Again, this has to go with my, like, I don't know who I would cast, yet I'm okay with the casting. Like, I don't have any rebuttal being like, this person should have definitely been Hazel. I don't think anyone could have filled those roles, but I thought that Ansel and Shailene did a fantastic job. So that's my two cents.
That's,
I don't really have
a very safe answer.
Exactly. Very safe. I wish I had someone in mind who I could be like campaigning for, but I don't.
I really liked her as Hazel.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I liked her as Hazel, but it's probably the first thing I've ever actually liked Shailene Woodley in, which I know is a super unpopular opinion. I just don't. I don't know.
I like her a lot.
I think I've only seen her in Divergent, though. That's
she reminds me of Kristen Stewart. There's something, and I can't put my finger on it, and I know that's horrible, and I'm going to get hate mail, but there is something about her during certain scenes of certain movies that I'm just like, oh my god, I'm watching Kristen Stewart, and nobody wants to do that. Like, I don't get all the rage. I really don't. And I don't. That's just me. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but there are things about her acting that I find annoying at times. Not all the time. There were times in Divergent that I really liked her, and there were other times I'm like, please punch her in the face some more.
Oh, I feel like I need to defend Kristen Stewart now, and I don't even like Twilight. But
are
you
kidding me?
I like Kristen Stewart. She gets a bad rap.
No, 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 no.
She gets a bad rap.
I don't like her.
No, I honestly, there have been very few things that I like Kristen Stewart in as well. Like, I don't know what it's the blinky, it always feels the same. It's the blinky, twitchy performance that I don't get it.
Well,
And maybe that's just
I
me,
don't
but I
mind
don't get it.
her. And I do like Shailene. I liked her in Divergent. I liked her in Spectacular Now. I liked her in, what was the George Clooney one?
The
Descendants?
Descendants. I liked her in The Descendants
Yeah.
as well, but like the other stuff, I don't know. There's something about it. There's this little like I can't put my finger on it, but if
Yeah.
I do, you all know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you
Yeah.
will.
Oh, hey now, says you.
I don't know to what you could be referring.
So yeah.
I thought she was really good as Hazel, but
No,
probably
I
because
definitely thought she was as Hazel.
I didn't have a very like definite idea in my head of what I wanted the characters to be like, whereas Brittany, I feel like you probably did, so it's more
Yeah,
difficult for you to get on board.
it wasn't like going into Harry Potter and seeing all of the characters be the perfect representation of what was in my head.
Okay, because I would definitely like disagree with that.
And that's a conversation for
How?
another
You have to come
chat.
on a different episode.
Maybe
All
in
right.
July sometime we'll have that conversation.
Yeah.
It sounds fitting.
What about Van Houten, Willem Dafoe? Do people
I thought
like
he
him?
did a great
I
job.
thought he
Great
was great.
curmudgeon. He was just nasty and crazy and quirky, and he did it very well.
Yeah, I really liked the girl that played his assistant, but I don't know what her name is.
She was very lovely too.
Yeah, she was so sassy. I
Yeah,
was
she
like,
was. She
and
wasn't taking it from him.
I was applauding her for climbing those stairs in those boots that she was wearing as well. And I feel like she doesn't get enough props for that.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. So, do you have a favorite scene, anyone?
I do. I have a lot of favorite
All
scenes.
right, you go ahead and tell us yours, and maybe we'll have a crossover somewhere.
Okay. Well, mine kind of one of them echoes Marima's is when they're coming home from Amsterdam, and the dad has the sign, like it says, "Welcome home, my beautiful family," and Gus. I loved that scene, and I think my other favorite scene actually was Hazel and Isaac talking after Gus's funeral. I don't know why. I loved that. They kind of, because they took their friendship out of the movie so much, that they were pretty buddy buddy for a lot of different times in the book as opposed to the movie. That scene just sort of like felt like it made all those parts they took out kind of like present, like they happened off screen. So I really enjoyed that scene when they were talking about, because like Nat's humor is just so good, and even when it's a really, really sad moment. I really enjoyed that one. I have a few
Okay.
others. The Swedish hip hop.
That
So good.
is just so quirky and crazy. Like, it was so strange.
Just like Willem Dafoe is just sitting there like with his like
I
head
know.
bobbing.
It was just so it was odd. I do agree though. Like it's kind of one of those things you're like, that's the strangest thing I've ever seen, and yet at the same time it works.
Yeah, it was so good.
Marima, did you have a favorite scene? I know you're not big on favorites, but
Hey now. I was just my favorite of anything that Nat Wolff was in because he was my favorite person in this movie, and I would quite like to see the spin-off of Isaac versus Gus and Hazel's love story. But yeah, I would agree with Brittany. The scene between Hazel and Isaac at the end was very sweet. And yeah, I did like their friendship a lot in the book, and it's a shame that that was one of the things that kind of didn't quite make it into the film. The trophy scene, like we talked about before, was really fantastic, and I like the way they did that a lot. Apart from that, I don't know, nothing really sticks out to me. Sorry, guys. I feel like I'm being really mean about this movie.
No, you're not at all, actually. You've been quite nice. I think the trophy scene was one of my favorites as well. I just there's something because all three of them in that scene are being, very different but very true to their character. And I just love watching him try to smash things and like have his little fit. It's hysterical. And Gus is like, "Yeah, go ahead, that one too. Yeah, okay, yeah, go ahead." And it just I don't know, there was something very endearing about that. And when they take him to throw the eggs at the car, I really like that scene as well.
Yeah, that, yeah. But again, Nat Wolfman. It's all about
Yeah, see, it's a theme. I'm sensing a theme. I feel like Paper Towns might be your movie, Marma.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is, I really hate that book, so maybe not. But when I was...
Maybe that wolf can change your mind.
When I was watching this movie, I did keep getting distracted by being like, oh, like, I wonder what he's going to be like as Q, because, you know, it's the first thing I've seen him in since that announcement, obviously. Although I did recently watch, I rewatched Stuck in Love, and I was like, oh, it's the Paper Towns boy. So we'll see. But that's not out for ages, so I can't, you know, get too attached.
Who knows, at this rate, it could be next summer's
movie. Yeah.
I could see them working on that schedule. I really could,
would with the say success that is a fairly safe prediction.
Yes, thank you. I do try. All right, so did you guys have a least favorite scene or things that you didn't like?
Yeah, Brittany, you had a thing you said, you something they changed or, that you didn't like? Or?
Oh, yeah. I have to get it back. Because I was thinking of another scene that I really liked, but...
You're like, I just want to talk about positive stuff.
Well, that was a change from the book, which is they changed for the movie that I really liked a lot better than the book.
Okay, oh, tell us that.
The end of the movie where I almost called him Willem Dafoe again. Van Houten hands Hazel the email that Gus wrote. Like in the book, she goes to Gus's house and she gets that notebook and that like page is missing and she needs to find it. Like, that whole part was just truncated to her finding the email. I loved that so much better than that. Because I always felt that that scene in the book, like, took you out of the emotion of the funeral and everything else. It sort of, like, dragged it on. Whereas this was sort of just, it was all in one day.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah,
I liked
that,
a lot better.
That was better.
Yeah.
So there wasn't anything you didn't like in it? I definitely had a thing I didn't like, and I'm going to talk about that now. I didn't like it in the book, but it made it so much worse for me to see it on screen, which was the Anne Frank kiss. And I know that that's like a controversial thing because I've definitely seen some reviews that have taken issue with it. And I'm not saying that I am right. I think... there are two interpretations of it that are like equally valid, but for me, that was that like fairly opaque metaphor that he was drawing between like her having cancer and Frank dying in the Holocaust like made me very uncomfortable. And the applause and everything in that.
Ugh, anytime there's applause, it's just bad.
Yeah, and like seeing it, it's seeing it for I guess. Because you can't escape it. Like, in the book, I'd kind of be like, okay, this is a thing that's happening that I wish was not happening, but, you know, I'll deal with it, I'll move on. But, like, when it's in a movie, you have no choice but to watch that just play out in front of you. And I really did not like that at all. And then for me, the other thing that I kind of didn't like about the film was, and you talked about this a little bit, Jen, was some of the dialogue. Because, they definitely made a choice to lift... the majority of it, like 80% of it at least, was taken directly from the book, and that will be very good for fans of the book, but so much of it was so awkward when they say it out loud. It's one thing to have it written down in a book and you can kind of imagine, oh yeah, like, you know, that's how this goes, whatever, but then when they say it, like, some of these things were not meant to be said out loud. They were meant to be put on, you know, like typography posters on Tumblr. So that was not great for me, and a lot of it felt very stilted, and the majority of that dialogue was from Augustus and, to some extent, Hazel. No one else talks as pretentiously, so it wasn't as noticeable, but again, like, I had those problems in the book, so they were just worse in the film.
Yeah, I agree. I do have an issue sometimes with the pretentiousness of the characters. Like, some of the things, I'm just like... I work with teenagers every day, and I have for lots of years, and no teenager I know talks that way.
No one talks like that. Like, there is no argument.
Right, in general.
There is no argument for that. Everyone says, no, like, I was really smart. You didn't talk like that. Trust me, you did not talk like that.
And, like, I have, like, this one girl in my class who, she absolutely reminds me of, like, the perfect hipster reading, like, she could be her own hipster reading club. She's, like, she's hysterical with the things that she'll ask me to pick up for her from the library. And I'm like, you want to read what now? And she's, like, reading the classics long before she has to. Like, she's totally, it's what she loves. And she does love John Green novels. And, but, like, she doesn't even talk like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, out of all the teenagers I know, the few that would talk that way don't, even with, you know, their background and stuff. And I know maybe that's narrow-minded for me to think that teenagers don't talk that way, but I've yet to run across one that does, and I work with them. So I don't know. That's the one thing that always kind of gets me with this is that the way they talk, because it doesn't always feel real.
Right. I think the thing is that's how teenagers think they talk. But it's not how they actually talk. Like, they think everything they're saying is so like, I'm allowed to say this. I was recently a teenager. You know, everything that you're saying feels so profound and so deep. And really, it's not. But, you know, you feel like it is. And that's why I think it worked a lot better in the book, because you could kind of get away with it being, like, Hazel remembering. Or when it was Hazel's internal monologue, you could get away with some of these more kind of outlandish phrases that she was saying. But in the movie, it's... everything else about the movie is meant to be realistic, so you're meant to believe, like, this is actually how these characters speak. And for me, that was quite a big disconnect, and it drew me out of the film because I didn't have that attachment to hearing these words spoken like a really big fan of the book would. And so it just felt really awkward for me, a lot of the dialogue. And the It's a Metaphor scene was definitely, like, you know, really embodies that whole issue that I had, but yeah. it was throughout the film. So yeah. I feel,
well,
like,
for me, it was the one, like, it was, what is this life? I was like, bleh.
Yeah, you're like, this isn't Tumblr. Stop, please.
It's sort of like, well, that's the point. Like, it sort of reminded me of, like, you know, those Tumblr
like
posts
what
that
is
are,
air?
Like, yeah, well, you know how, like, people type them in all caps, but then they have, like, those videos making fun of it where it's just the person scrolling on their computer, like, with a deadpan face typing, and, like, but then it shows the post, and it's like, well, I can't breathe, I'm sobbing all over the place, but they're just, like, scrolling.
Yeah.
like, it sort of, like, reminded me of that, and I definitely agree with both of you that the dialogue, some things are meant to be, like you said, on a poster on your wall and not necessarily said out loud, but... a majority of the fans that were there the other night loved that. Anytime a line was pulled directly from the book, they were literally gasping and screaming, what is air? So
yeah, I totally agree with that. But I think I will be interested to see how this goes in, like, the next few weeks, because obviously it's all the big fans are turning out for the opening weekend, as they should. But a lot of the, I don't know, it's been interesting. Like, the reviews have been quite mixed. And there seems to be this thing about the film that the book had where, like, everyone says they love it, so everyone else says they love it. You know what I mean? Like, it was the time book of the year, which I still think was super questionable considering, like, just what it was and the writing and everything in it. And it has, like, so much hype about it. And the film has so much hype that when you read reviews, like, the actually really critical reviews are pretty few and far between. And that is interesting to me because, like I said, I think it was a really fantastic adaptation, but I think because of some of the adaptation choices they made, it was actually not a very good film for, like, a lot of the reasons that I've mentioned. So I'm curious to see how it does with people who are not as familiar with the book or aren't familiar with the book, because I think that will be the real test of it. You know, it's like one thing to have fans who love it go and scream it for Ansel Elgort and go and cheer because they say, my thoughts are stars, I cannot fathom, you know, all of these things. But someone that isn't familiar with that material, I am curious to see if they would have the same attachment and, like, the same reverence for it, because I personally don't think they will. And that's definitely a decision they made when they were making it. Who are they appealing to? And they definitely, it's a film for fans. So I don't know how, like, general public will deal with it.
And see, that's really interesting because, and this is in no way to equate this to Twilight. It's just a reference point. Because when Twilight the movie came out, everyone assumed that it was only book fans going to see that film. And it wasn't. There is a whole breed of fans that went to see that film that had never read the book. And those are the people that kept going and seeing it again and, you know, going to all of the subsequent films. So it's interesting how an adaptation you think is solely supported by book fans actually isn't, and it creates its own fan base just around the film as well. So I'm beginning to wonder if the same thing is going to happen with The Fault in Our Stars. If it, yes, it's a big deal and it's got a huge book base and that's amazing, but will it pull in these other people? I mean, granted, it's not a series. It won't be a franchise. I think in the end, the franchise will be John Green. I think right, he will become definitely. Like Nicholas Sparks in that sense that they write books and those books get made into film. Like,
oh yeah,
I honestly feel this was that's the test case. Take the shape of it. Yeah. And like, it clearly passed.
Yeah. They'll do Paper Towns. They'll do Alaska, you know, right. They'll just keep and then going.
They're
going
to get on him to write a couple more books.
Yeah. Cause no one wants to adapt Catherine's.
Right.
No, absolutely not.
Or Will Grayson, Will Grayson.
Oh, I liked Will Grayson, Will Grayson.
I think it could work, but I'm saying, you know what I mean?
I don't think the world is ready for Will Grayson, Will Grayson.
Yeah. I don't think so. So, I mean, but that's what we're looking at. So I think, you know, in those terms, it'll be interesting to see if it does flip itself and become more than just a fan base of book lovers and have its own kind of fan base built around it because everyone's talking about it. I think this is the kind of film where word of mouth will play the ultimate, you know, the ultimate role.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened with Twilight. It was really about a fan base that existed for the books and then women who just really liked Rob Pattinson. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a weird kind of conglomeration of fans that turned out for this and stuck with it and made it the multi-bajillion dollar franchise that it was. So it'll be interesting to see if this plays out the same way because, you know, Ansel and Shailene kind of have a fan base already from Divergent that could cross over that really, you know, those two fan bases may not mix all that much.
Yeah.
Under normal circumstances. But, you know, that, hey, we saw them in this movie, and this movie is really cool, so maybe, you know, this movie will be cool as well. If they can get past the part. I know some people will get very stuck on the part where they play brother and sister, and now they play lovers.
That's
but
like, whatever. Just get over it.
Dude, they're
it.
Actors. That's yeah. They get paid. So, yeah. So, I mean, that part will be really interesting to see how that works out in the end. So, like you said, it will be interesting to see future numbers. But I don't think it's going to drop that much, to be honest. Because
no,
here's the other thing.
I agree.
I think people who have seen it once are going to want to go back and see it again
right.
and again. And
I
so
know.
I think, why put yourself through the torture, first of all? But I think that that will happen, and that will keep it going through a good portion, this first half of the summer.
Well,
especially
I know
now
I'm
that
going to see it again.
See, and it'll be your third time.
It'll right? be my third time.
That's crazy. Yeah, but so I think that will probably... Again, that Brittany is a prime example of fans of the book showing up for the movie multiple times. And that's essentially what happened with the Twilight films. People were seeing it five times at the theater. That's a lot of dough. Really, think about that. It's like $50 on a movie that
oh,
you've
yeah.
already seen.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I guess it's an interesting phenomenon to me that, you know, there's this book that's out that everyone feels so reluctant to criticize because about this girl
right.
with cancer, right? Like, there is definitely this culture around The Fault in the Stars that it's very difficult to have a legitimate conversation about the problems with that book, which are many. You know, it's definitely not a perfect book. Like, it hit a sort of flashpoint with fans, and I totally understand why people love it, but there are, like, legitimate criticisms that you can make of that book, depending on where you're coming from. And I would definitely say the same thing is true for the film, but... Like, even in a lot of the critical reviews that I've seen, the reviews are just, they're not even good reviews, you know what I mean? But they still give it, like, 4 stars. They're just, like, basically saying, oh, the cast is really good and it's based off this well-known book and, you know, maybe now we'll see more young adult. 5 stars. Like, You know what I mean? It seems so bizarre to me because...
Well, Louis's review was pretty solid.
Yeah.
Okay, give it a B minus. I mean...
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't... that's what I think. I think it probably sits, like, for me around a B. I just don't think it's a fantastic film. And I do have friends that have seen it who have not read the books, like, you know, reviewer friends. And they, like, it's not... starts off really strong and then it kind of loses itself a bit. And... I feel like if you don't have the anchor of loving the book, it's a lot easier to see it in a, I don't know. Like
neutral light?
Yeah.
Neutral
light. I mean, I don't want to say, I was going to say objective. I'm not trying to say like fans are not objective. I'm not trying to diminish why fans like Brittany really love the book. I understand why they do, but it's just as legitimate to not like it and not like the film. But there seems to be this kind of air around both the book and the film where it's really difficult to, for people to say that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. I absolutely understand.
Yeah. Anyway, the media blitz for this film was ridiculous in the last few weeks.
It was
like even
insane.
Even over here, it was crazy, and they usually don't do that much like international for these kinds of things. So it's no wonder that it is doing so well.
I was trying to watch like a rerun on ABC Family, and every 3 commercials was a promo for The Fault in Our Stars, and I finally just gave up. I was like, I don't need to watch this rerun of The Middle.
Right.
On ABC Family.
That is exactly what's happening here. And usually they just don't care because they're like, Australia, like, international. They don't count. But it was crazy.
I do have a least favorite scene, though, guys.
Oh, all right. Tell
Give
us.
Give it to us.
I loved your conversation, but I did think of one in the middle of it, and I didn't want to just, like, interject.
Oh, that's what we do on Book Hype. Don't you know that by now?
So my least favorite scene was when Gus is sick and Hazel takes him to the Funky Bones Park. And the only reason that was my least favorite scene is because my brother and I have this mutual agreement that at the end of the book, before Gus dies, Hazel does not love him anymore. And that's been, like, I love the book. I loved the movie. But that was one thing that was not really shown in the movie that I took away from the book, personally.
Oh, interesting.
Was that
I have not
Hazel
heard that
fell...
before.
Oh, yeah. We are firm believers that Hazel and Gus fell out of, well, not Gus, but Hazel fell out of love with Gus as an, like, a means to sort of distance herself.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the eulogy scene, like, it's not so far removed that she can't tap into her, like, true feelings of love that she had gained, but we really think that she fell out of love by the end. And that scene, like, just sort of washed over it, and she was able to like forgive Gus like so quickly when he was like trying to put on a brave face for her.
See, I think in the voiceover you can tell that that there's something wrong with how she's speaking about him.
Mm-hmm.
When she says, you know, I would like to say Augustus Waters remained, you know, charming or whatever it was until the end, but he didn't. I mean, she almost sounds a little bit bitter about it as she's discussing it in the voiceovers of those scenes. So I definitely think that your point is valid, and I think there are some hints of it in the film, even if it's not in that particular scene. I think it in the voiceover and in how the rest of that plays out once he's that sick, that it's very, there's something apparent there in her voice and in her tone about how she felt about that whole situation.
Yeah, which is why, like, I did enjoy the movie, is because you do get that feeling that she's sort of, like, because they don't have the scene in the movie where, like, Gus's family comes over, or any of the scenes where, like,
right,
they had to move his bed upstairs, or, like, none of that is in the, when he's, like, really, really sick. They didn't put any of that in the movie. And that's where you really feel it the most. But I do agree that I couldn't pinpoint it, but that is true, is her voiceover is what adds that little bit of negativity.
That is interesting. Perfect. Although, mm-hmm. just going off that, I have to say I was, like, disappointed that they really sanitized his death, because everyone always goes on about, oh, Fault in Our Stars is so true to life, it's so realistic. Like, you really didn't see him, apart from that scene where he's going to the service station and she goes to get him, like, you really don't see him be sick in a way. Like, he still looks pretty much the same. He's just, you know, he's in a wheelchair, or, like, he's just sitting down, etc. Because they cut, like you said, they cut all of those scenes about him, like, wetting the bed and all of these, like, horrible things that are happening to him, which was a shame because it made it a bit more, I don't know, like, you know what I mean? It felt very, like, vanilla in a way, the end of it. Which, I mean, you know, depends what you're into. I'm just saying. There were quite a lot of things cut out, but that was... And for various reasons, but that was a shame, I think, that they cut a lot of that section.
Yeah, and I think that's because of the audience they were catering to.
Right.
Like, I feel like if this had been, like, maybe, like, you know, how a Nicholas Sparks novel, just to bring him back, he's more catered to, like, an older audience, whereas this is, like, 13-year-olds. Like, maybe the older audience could handle Gus being that sick, whereas this audience is sort of just, like... They can read about it, but maybe seeing it would be too much.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, on screen, I think sometimes when you're looking at a movie like this, you can only go so far. Do you know what I mean? You want to give the vibe of illness, you want to give the feeling of death, but you don't want to show it, maybe, if that makes sense.
No, like, that totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it just really enforced for me, like, something that I felt about the book, which was, even though it has been promoted as this kind of edgy, realistic thing. Like, in a way, it's a very safe story. You know, it's between, like, a heterosexual couple, and they're both white, and they're both, you know, middle class-ish. And in a way, like, a lot of that is sanitized in the book as well, depending on, you know, the points of the story. Like, Amsterdam, obviously totally ridiculous that that could actually happen. And in the film, like, just more, that became more obvious to me with them cutting those things out. I don't begrudge them doing it. You know, they've got to appeal to their audience. They've got to make money. It's just an interesting change that, like, was a very obvious creative decision to go in that kind of safer way.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. All right. So what does this mean for other YA adaptations?
We'll get lots of them.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to get lots of a new type. I think that's what's been missing from the adaptation scene, to be honest. Everything is dystopian or supernatural, and those kind of hit hard, and some of them didn't do well. So now we have this shift from those big budget films like Divergent and Twilight and all of those ones that have a lot of special effects and need a lot of that stuff to The Fault in Our Stars that only cost $12 million, which for a movie budget is not massive at this point. So we can now look at things like If I Stay, which is coming out in August, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Paper Towns, which has been optioned. Eleanor and Park, which has been optioned. So now we have this new type of YA novel being optioned. And I think it's going to be more successful in a way because A, the budgets are lower, costs are lower. And if they can hit with a little bit of success, you know what I mean? I mean, clearly The Fault in Our Stars hit with a lot of success. Right. That it's going to change the shape of what YA movies look like right now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely only a good thing. If this means that we're definitely going to get that Eleanor and Park movie, then I'll go see it like four more times if that's what needs to happen.
And Rainbow Rowell's writing that one. So how
yeah. She's writing the screenplay.
Sign me up now.
Definitely.
Can we have it? Please.
And, yeah. You know, I feel we need to say also, it's definitely hasn't started with The Fault in Our Stars. Like, there was The Spectacular Now. There was Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Right,
like, these things contributed, but they didn't have anywhere near the impact of this because you need a film to do this well.
They flew very much below the radar.
Yeah.
I mean, Perks was a little more noticeable. The Spectacular Now really flew under the radar.
It did,
like,
it was
there and it was great, but, like, it was not talked about the way even Perks was talked. I mean, Perks was talked about more than The Spectacular Now.
Yeah, but I think...
But not to the extent that any of the more recent YA adaptations have been.
Right. I think what came out of that, though, was this understanding that you can actually make a really solid young adult film without it being about vampires or witches or angels or any of these things. And that is, like,
make it about real life.
Yeah, and that is the basis for them deciding, like, oh, okay, well, if we can make those kinds of films, like, we can make The Fault in Our Stars, and The Fault in Our Stars doing so well is going to be the catalyst for other, you know, studios saying, okay, well, if this can do that well and, like, we can make our money back from it and make more money and make a hell of a lot of money, then, you know, what other young adult books can we pick up? And, I mean, I think that's only a good thing. If that's what comes out of this, then I'm very grateful to The Fault in Our Stars.
Absolutely. All right, so we have some listener feedback. We have one from Ryan Floyd who says, I loved it. but felt that a lot of the depth of the book was lost, particularly foreshadowing, metaphor, and pacing. All right. What do you guys think about the pacing? I didn't think of that. Yeah, it felt a little.
I feel like the first third was good, and then the Amsterdam third was, like, dragged, and then the last bit was just very condensed. I didn't love it. It was okay. It wasn't, like, noticeably dragging. I could have been a little bit, I don't know. I think it could have been reworked a little bit.
Okay.
I liked it.
All right, we have one other comment from Leah, who says, loved it quite a lot, and yes, lots of crying, mostly in the second half of the movie. Also loved the fans in my theater. So there you go.
I'm just imagining everyone going to the Fault in Our Stars and, like, making friends with the people next to them and, like, exchanging Tumblr names. They can go home and, like, share, like, GIFs of Ansel Elgort with each other. Is that what actually happens?
Come on out.
Brittany, know, please maybe. Report back. You're the only one that's actually seen it in a cinema.
It was awful. Like, I did not want to be there. I wanted to hide. They're like, it's like rampant fangirls. Like, and they had the Q&A after. And you would have thought that John Green was sitting in the front row. I'm like, they cannot hear you screaming for him.
Wow.
Like, they're, the fangirl was, it was out and it was proud and it was loud.
Fangirl levels were high. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. All right. So do you guys have anything else for this episode?
No.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks for coming on, Brittany. Hope we didn't scare you off.
Is there out there?
No. Although, like, I guess if people are Fault in Our Stars fans, they should probably check out the set report that Andrew did that I will link in the show notes. Yep. And, you know, you might want to read the review that Louis did for A Different Opinion. And then we have another article about, like, Easter eggs and missing scenes. So we'll link all of that. So you guys can just continue with your Fault in Our Stars fest.
That I did see John Green's deleted scene after because it was shown to our theater and the night before Our Stars. And A-plus acting. I don't know why they cut it.
Wait, really? Are you being sarcastic?
No, it was really funny. It was maybe 25 seconds long, and it was a little weird because, like, Hazel sort of, like, puts, like, the cannula on a little, on the girl who's playing John Green's daughter to, like, let her see what it feels like to have it in her nose. But you do get to see Ansel, like, pacing around the airport, like, not being able to sit still. And I thought that was really funny because that was a funny part in the book where, like, he wasn't around, like, even when they were boarding the flights because he was, like, pacing back and forth, like, getting McDonald's and, like, doing all of that. But, yeah, it was funny. It was weird to watch him. Like, you could tell he was clearly uncomfortable.
That's funny.
He's a little awkward. In a good way, but awkward. All right, well, that wraps up this episode of Book Hype. As always, you guys can leave your comments in the post. Tweet us. We'd love to hear from you. And if you guys have any suggestions of books we should be reading for our book club of the month, send them our way because we're always looking for new books to talk about. We were just trying to decide what we're doing next and we still don't know. So any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
It'll be a surprise to both you and us.
But we'll keep you posted as soon as we decide. Although Isla is definitely going to be
August.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Isla will definitely be August's book because Marama and I said so.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, we haven't done a like cute little like rom-com type book.
And
anyway,
so
we keep doing so many like supernatural. I don't want to read about witches anymore. Like I want to read about Paris.
We do know what July is going to be. July will be the Queen of the Tierling.
Oh, duh.
Yeah, totally. I was like, wait, we decided July? So if you guys have any suggestions for June, which we're already in, throw them our way because we're a little behind in the times, kids.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. Brittany, thank you so much for coming on and talking books with us. We greatly appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks, Brittany.
And we will talk to you guys again next time. So until then, I'm Jen.
I'm Marima.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, guys.